he was
okay.
He was burned. In the original story, it was acid, but they change it around a lot. And then he
It was when the entire hospital blew up. Or
yeah, yeah. And in Dark Knight, they do the entire hospital blows up, and he's got his face half down in gasoline.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
yeah.
you know, his hand and his face get half fucked up.
You know who has a chastity cage?
Who?
Bane.
Welcome to Please Don't Listen
you
to
can
the
tell
show.
From
like,
the bitrate.
The show where we do something different every single week. And this week, we watched The Crow.
Wow.
That's right. This was...
Quote from The Raven. I'm going to include it in here for some reason.
We have here with me today, we've got Shotgun Full of Wedding Rings, Alex.
Hello. Like currently exploding your local pawn shop.
Let's see. We have undead guitarist, Seb.
Cameron every day. Actually, what he says is Cameron all the time.
Yeah. His famous line.
The sentiment was right.
Everyone recognizes him because he says that line.
And I am knife-wielding Tintin, Nick.
Wow, yeah. The sequel to our Tintin episode.
The sequel to our Tintin episode. Tintin. Yeah. Tintin had a hard, you know, growing up.
Yeah, it looks a little
he
different.
He also became black.
He had a rough childhood. He became black. That's hard on him.
That's rough.
You don't want it to happen. Race shifting, it's, you know, if you can avoid it.
Where are you going with this?
I'm not really going anywhere. What I'm saying is kids don't juggle knives.
Okay.
It's a bad habit.
It'll
have.
Turn you black? Unless is that
no,
what you're
hold
saying?
On. Oh, those things aren't connected to each other.
You have knives that never miss.
I love.
Don't go against the guy who could catch them.
Or a guy who isn't real, I guess.
Or a ghoulish crow man.
Yeah. But The Crow is based on an indie comic. And the premise of that indie comic is that a crow helps ferry someone's soul to the afterlife when they die. But sometimes this feeling is too strong. The crow will bring them back. So that they can take care of the unfinished business.
Yeah, written by James O'Barr after his wife was killed by a drunk driver.
Hmm.
And that was his way of
working
dealing with it.
Huh.
Was taking revenge on asshole people in the comic. So.
And this
or
is
his
not...
his fiancée, rather,
This is not a new sentiment. It's a very old story. Mm. The vengeful ghost...
Vengeance is as old as time, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
As long as there's two guys on the planet, someone is going to want
someone. Oh, my God. We can't let this go.
It's the oldest story in the world. I'm going to have you guys read...
Cain and Abel.
Norse mythology.
People have been climbing out of their own graves since we invented graves. That's what we've been doing. And it struck me as a very classical... kind of motivation and framing for the story. Isn't this
He's
actually,
too angry to die. Local man too
help,
angry to
help
die.
Help me out here, Alex. Is this not literally the plot of Christopher's fake movie in Sopranos?
Yes, correct.
He gets killed and he comes back to take revenge.
Yes. Yeah, his boss whacks him and he comes back. Yeah, kill him with a cleaver. Yep.
And that would have been after this movie came out too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's probably like 2006 or something when that.
This is as an idea. Yeah. Like, this is a very classical idea. This is the kind of thing that you would see in old horror serials and EC comics and pulp things.
I'm going to bring this up definitely during the body of the episode, but the film Dark Man is essentially the plot of this movie.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know where the chronology lines up, but I kept thinking about Dark Man for
Dark
this
Man
one.
Is also a very pulpy, like, old comic serial very, adventure style thing.
Yeah, that one reminded me a lot of, like, Dick Tracy stuff, which this doesn't really get into because the aesthetic is way different. But
yeah.
You get some noir vibes all around.
For sure. And there's also, you know, a lot of genre fiction that is like this. A ghostly, you know, suit of armor at a or a samurai story or something like that. And we just saw Pale Rider as well, but... there's another one. There's another Clint Eastwood one that's like this. Hang him high. He doesn't actually die. They hang him wrong. But they
hang him low?
Should be called Hang Him Wrong.
Should have hang him wrong. And Clint Eastwood. He's like, they should have done it right the first time.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. But I also think, of course, of Ghost Rider, which got turned into a movie like 10 years after this.
Yeah.
But that was certainly around the time of a guy who was undead, calling himself the spirit of vengeance and using the powers of hell to take this on people. But I mean, hey, we also have the connection, a direct connection, because who's in this movie? Tony Todd. It's hard to tell because he doesn't talk that much in it.
That's true. But,
and he's wearing sunglasses for half the movie.
Oh, he looks so good.
He looks so good.
Yeah.
But then when he finally opened his mouth, I'm like, there's no way. There's no way that's him.
Candyman himself.
Yeah. And, who else is like an undead spirit who is not so much about vengeance, but still is coming back from the dead and killing people is Candyman.
Yeah.
We have that kind of story.
It tracks.
Yeah. And a lot of our slashers are kind of built around this righteous anger. Not all of them, but you got your Jasons who have like the feeling of like doing this for revenge, like they're coming back and it's like, I was wronged in life and I'm going to exact what I perceive as my justice for all time because of it. And this is like a very classical emotion, a very classical story, something that we see like all the time. Like it's just very evocative emotion. Like like you said, literally being too angry to die.
Yeah.
Like I have to come back. I have to take care of this. And the image of somebody, you know, like they're, you know, the first time I was just flesh and blood, but now I'm an idea.
Gotta bring it back to Batman again. I don't think that's a
Dark
Knight
quote.
Actually,
what I was thinking there is the fucking V for Vendetta thing.
Oh, all right,
right. Which it's because I'm an idea, and ideas are bulletproof.
Yeah,
however he says it in that
fuck.
One.
What a shitty movie. Oh boy.
Alan Moore, wonderful track record that guy of having his work adapted. I was thinking about League of Extraordinary Gentlemen when we were doing this because I was thinking about comics getting adapted into... No, wait. I was thinking about really fake cities.
Oh,
about,
yeah. Like, well, about,
yeah. The effects in this are a thing.
Let's set a miniature on fire. Nobody will notice.
1994.
The miniature does not look anything like a real city in this, but I find that to be very endearing.
Yeah, it was kind of
charming.
The
Miramax logo looked more like a city at the beginning of this movie than the movie.
Do you guys think you would have that motivation in you if you were wrongfully killed in some way? Like, let's say you got hit by a drunk driver. Are you coming back to exact your revenge?
I think it's really, I don't know. I think it's weird that anyone who's dead would give a shit, I think.
Yeah. I would give a shit. If I got hit by a drunk driver, like, that guy could go out and drunk drive again.
No, I'd be like, I'm already chilling. Like, if the afterlife is a thing that's real, I'd be like, why would I ever want to go back?
In the Discworld, they portray souls as soon as they die as immediately being like freed of the burden of caring.
Yeah, it
about
seems
anything.
Like it would be great. Yeah, I don't know.
Like once you're there, once you understand that you're dead, you got to be like, oh well, I guess that's it then. Like, I mean, how could you have the desire in you to come back unless it was such a powerful emotion that it was like,
yeah, it's like just move
body.
On, bro. She doesn't love you anymore.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like that's the feeling that I
and
would.
The
get.
One who doesn't love you is the air.
Yeah, it's the existence.
So, this isn't really spoilers, but I'm still working my way through Act 3 of Baldur's Gate 3 because I lost steam for a little while and then I've gone back to it and then I stopped.
And by lost steam, you mean that
somebody had your login?
Yeah, the program stopped working.
Yeah, I uninstalled Steam from my computer. No, so there is in the third act a little side thing you can do where there's a ghost in this noble lady's house. And if you rescued the painter in the first act, he'll be there. And this will cause this to happen. And he had a girlfriend before who killed herself, you find out. And he tried to communicate with her via this like scam artist guy who's like, I can help you communicate with the dead. And he does that.
Spirit medium shit.
But it curses a painting of her and she's just like terrorizing the entire house. So you finally get her to come out and talk to you and she's like, I hate you, you meddling bitch. Because about his new wife and everything. Turns out she didn't actually want revenge. It was just a effect of the exorcism, and she's just upset that she came back.
Yeah.
Because she just wanted to be in peace, because she didn't kill herself over him. She just killed herself because she was depressed.
Yeah, I think that's the vibe. I think it would be bad as a spirit to be anywhere near these fucking meat bags.
No, I think it depends. What if they're meat bags that I care about and I don't want the driver to hit them?
At that point, they're all... You can't care about anything. Your soul doesn't have the capacity to.
I like to care.
You are eternally chilling.
Wow, all yeah.
Right. I mean, like, okay. There's also, like, the matter of, like, in this, he comes back and he sort of has a body in The Crow. I feel like the more common instance is to come back as a ghost. That is the more traditional way of doing it, like as a vengeful, wispy spirit who just dematerializes as soon as their work is done.
Mm. Yeah, this guy has to leave through the door most of the time.
And he does many times in this film.
Yeah, like, but he can also just disappear.
Mm-hmm. Very ethereal.
Yeah.
Neither of you guys are Game of Thrones heads at all, right?
Nope.
Not really.
I know Winter came at some point.
Yeah.
I watched like 2 episodes of it.
You're all good, because I'm about to talk about something that didn't even happen in the show.
Okay. Great, okay.
It happens in the books.
Did not read a word of the books.
There is a character called the Ghost of High Heart, and that is just the name of an oracle who talks about like many things that are going to happen in vague ways, and then of course they come true. But sort of connected to her is a character called Lady Stoneheart, who is, because the person who died had their throat slit, she can't talk. But the spirit like of the vengeance is so powerful within her, she is still able to like communicate with people in some ways. And people like want to follow her because she has this righteous justice of the people who murdered her.
Yeah.
But she cannot get like, she is such an off-screen character for most of the time we know about her. They're like, oh, did you hear about this Lady Stoneheart people going around cutting people's throats? It's like, yeah, that's crazy. It's like, that could be anything. We don't know anything about this character. We only found out that they're a magic zombie, like, once we finally meet them. Because people could be talking shit. It could be anything, you know?
Yeah. Just a story or whatever.
Even when there's a story where there's, like, magic involved in the story. Like, the story Seb just told about Baldur's Gate 3. It's like, you don't immediately want to jump to, oh, this person is a reanimated corpse out for vengeance. Mm-hmm. It could be that somebody's, you know, fucking wearing a mask and jumping around, or somebody is like taking on the name of their dead sister or something like that.
Like we said, of course, ideas are bulletproof.
Yes, of course. I believe we said that many times. But
our favorite line
line from V for Vendetta that we're so early out of season of Morvember. I've written it down so I won't forget it. You guys are gonna read Promethea this year.
Wow.
Which is something that neither of you have ever heard of. And we have to watch
Prometheus and to compare and contrast.
You know, I don't think we do. but like, I can sort of like, I feel like I would be zen after my death. I don't have that kind of energy in me for anger.
No, I don't have the energy in me for anger now, so I'll be good.
Now, there's of course the mom classic of Patrick Swayze's Ghost.
Of course.
Which is very much like he's kind of listless. He doesn't really want revenge until the end.
Yeah.
But that's like a weird love triangle where you have a love triangle with somebody who's alive and somebody who's dead. That does have one of the best getting dragged to hell scenes in any movie ever, though, of like the horrible wispy spirits dragging him off to the afterlife after at the end of that movie. I think that's kind of the idea, that the kind of unfinished business keeping a dead spirit around. That has been kind of that's like the main animating like pop culture piece, I think, is Ghost for a while. Mm-hmm. That's the one that stuck around most in the consciousness. And people certainly know The Crow. But I think mostly for the stuff that happens around the movie, as opposed to stuff that's in
the context.
Or they know specifically Brandon Lee, his outfit and his makeup.
The design.
Like, that's what they think of. They don't think of, like, well, what are the circumstances behind the Crow showing up?
Yeah.
No. But, yeah, we definitely still see a lot of ghost ones. Not so much the other stuff. Like, we had The Conjuring when we were
at the Conjuring movie. A revenge one?
Sort of. The ghost is vengeful. They built the house on, like, an Indian burial ground. And then somebody got...
Poltergeist again?
I guess so.
Like, I watched somebody this movie. Got I don't killed remember any of this.
I only watched it once, and it wasn't at the theater. But, yeah, like, there were, like, two things going on with, like, two ghosts or something there. Like, somebody got killed in the house. It was an Indian burial ground or something like that. But, yeah, you see a lot of that kind of thing. Like, oh, the cursed doll, and now the kid that died is taking revenge on anybody, whatever.
You could say the ghost had some kind of grudge.
Wow. Wow.
Actually, that ghost is, like, really, like, not even, like, righteous at all. It's just anyone who shows up at my house, I kill them. Yeah. Just, like, just,
leave me alone.
Yeah. It's more just a rule of thumb than it is a specific vengeance.
I don't know. I don't like that. I see, that seems like so much work. Like, I don't want to have a job after I die.
Yeah, the whole point is you don't have to have a job.
I wouldn't kill everybody. I would just kill the one person who... Yeah, like, kill the people involved with my death.
You need to be corporeal, or are you just going to scare them into crashing their car or something?
I think I want to be corporeal.
All right, so that's...
If we're presupposing... I don't want to get, like, philosophical with this, but if you really hated some guys and you died, you would want to kill them so they're dead too and they have to hang out with you? How does that work?
No, they would go to hang out with
them. They sit at a different lunch table than me.
Okay, all right. It's just like it would be like buying someone you hate a house right next door to you, it feels like.
Well, then you can keep an eye on them and play really loud music so they can't sleep.
I think it's more like when people get mad, like, hey, I had to pay my student loans off. You shouldn't get yours forgiven.
Oh.
This is a spite thing.
Okay, all right.
It's like, how come I had to die early?
Well, I mean, if they were an asshole, they shouldn't get their student loans forgiven.
How come you still get to eat food and have sex, huh? Well, fuck you. I'll fix you good.
Being a ghost is the ultimate sex,
though. If you're a jerk
to
me, you don't deserve those things.
I think it is.
You should just never get laid ever again.
You can't disprove me.
I can't. Unless I die, which I'm thinking about right now. Or thinking about doing
it. Well, just come back and exact vengeance on me so we can live next door to each other.
Do you have your... You want to bring...
Yeah, you want to bring up Shadow the Hedgehog or what?
I'll bring up my boy. So Shadow is... He doesn't necessarily really die.
But he only fell from space, no big deal.
He fell from space, but before that he was in, like, cryo sleep for 50 years, so pretty much dead. And he comes back and he thinks what he wants is to exact revenge on humankind. Because Eggman is like, hey, we have to, like, take over the Ark and blow up the Earth.
Space colony Ark, of course.
Yep.
Shaped like Eggman's face. Or
blow up the moon. And he's like, sure. You know, he's like, Maria, I promise you revenge. Wow. Which is what he says.
I love his line about being a genie at the beginning where he's like, thank you for freeing me, Doctor. I will grant you one wish. And Eggman's like, okay.
Yep. it's a bit of
like, I like having a bit as soon as you get unfrozen. Yeah. Like, I'm even thinking about
he's
that.
He's had a lot of time to prep.
This is going to be so cool when I get out of here.
Yeah. So he's pretty much, because Maria was killed, he's just like, everybody's evil and I hate them and they all deserve to die. And as the Ark is hurtling towards Earth with him and everybody else on it, he's just like, yeah, this is fine. Until Amy comes in and is like, hey, what are you doing? Like, do you really think your Maria lady would have wanted this? And then he realizes not. Wow. But then...
Amy Rose saved the day.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Then he falls from space, forgets everything. And in Shadow the Hedgehog, topic of our last Hazmat's episode, there are paths where all Hazmat's he wants to ever. Do is take revenge on everybody because everything sucks. And I think that's kind of cool. Because Shadow is cool.
Did you see that Denny's is doing a Sonic menu? Do you see that?
I did.
The Shadow chocolate pancakes.
Apparently, they're not new items, I think. They're just themed around Sonic.
Well, I enjoy blueberry pancakes with blueberry syrup, so I may get the Sonic the Hedgehog pancakes.
No, I think it's IHOP.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I think so.
I don't think there's not an IHOP around here.
I remember thinking, oh man, we don't have one of those around here. We used to.
I think if we go a little out of our way, isn't there one over by, like, Buckland Hills?
Yeah, that's like an hour away. I think I'm we might have to try.
Unless we go up to see a movie. We're going to do it for the show.
I'd like to do that to see a movie because that theater is fucking huge.
We have to see Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and eat the menu.
Yep.
And then we'll talk about it on the podcast.
Okay.
Listeners, send us an email to how much you'd love to listen
we
to that.
We do have an email that I will be talking about after we come back from this brief request. Just going to take a little dirt nap and then we'll be back.
Do we not have any other vengeance. Video games that are relevant?
I don't think so.
I think I got about everything I wanted to talk
about. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance is about a rare kind of...
Fatal Frame is not really... I mean, like, there are...
I don't know about any... Like, I'm trying to think, like, there's a lot of them. Fatal Frame is like...
Metal Gear Rising Revengeance is about a rare kind of vengeance.
Okay.
Ryu Vengeance.
Yes. And that one is about how if you're, you know, it's like you're... It really takes the metaphor to the next step, continuing on the Metal Gear Solid 4 thing of, like, oh, you know, when you pursue the path of revenge, you lose yourself, and they choose to show this literally by having Raiden be just a jawbone and nice hair by the end of it.
Yeah.
It's a good game. And then at the beginning of Revengeance, they have him get fucked up so bad that he's like even less he's got even less skin and human body in there. It's like he's got artificial blood, and like everything about it is like totally broken.
He's like the Crow.
He's like the Crow in some ways.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yep. He's like Eric.
He uses a sword.
Mm-hmm.
Once.
Well,
yeah. Yeah.
All right, before we get any more in the weeds on this, I do think we should take the break.
All right.
When we come back, we will be discussing The Crow.
The Wheels of Nature.
People once believed that when someone dies, a crow carries their soul to the land of the dead. But sometimes, just sometimes, the crow can bring that soul back to put the wrong things right.
Gasoline I smell?
Victims, aren't we all?
We want to get into this? Or?
Oh, wow. All right. Give me one second. I'm going to write down the tasting history.
You can have whatever opinion you want.
You're right. Seb's just going to kill you with throwing knives.
Yeah.
It's no big deal.
Come back
yeah,
for,
if you don't like
back
it,
for,
I'll just kill
for
you.
For vengeance.
But you're entitled to that.
Yeah. I'm going to duct tape me into a car.
Yeah. You can have your free speech, but it has consequences.
Wow. Very conservative of you.
Oh, boy. All right.
Cancel culture is coming for fans of the film The Crow.
It sure isn't. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Please Don't Listen to This. Your Life Depends on It. The show where we do something different every single week. And this week, we watched The Crow. That was pretty good. Seb, give us a little bit of your history with this film and why you chose it.
All right, so my history with this film is I grew up on the internet.
Wait, hold on. Actually, before you get into this, I want to remember to do the community segment
now.
Oh,
we have to read an email.
All right. Yes. We grew up on the internet using email.
Yes, electronic mail. The Crow also used electronic mail.
He might have.
So we received something that is not illegal, but watch, but you know, watch yourself about this, which is a proxy email. Somebody asked someone else to send in an email to us.
We only
this email's been laundered through a third party.
That's right, a third party we know very well, our friend Destiny.
Wow.
From a hater of the podcast, Andrew.
Not fan Drew.
Please play the demo for Unicorn Overlord.
Wow.
It's free, and even if nobody likes it, it would be a good discussion.
Wow.
No, he will not be participating or listening.
Good, okay.
Best regards, Little Penguin listener. Thank you, Destiny, and thank you, Andrew, for even though I just know you want an excuse to make us talk about Ogre Battle. But like I have also heard nothing but good things about Unicorn Overlord, and I'm sure
there are hot elf babes.
Yes, this is a vanilla very good.
One of the things that I heard is that the demo goes on so long that you are not sure when it's going to end. I mean that in a positive way. Like you are, they're probably going to cut it off now. So I want to buy the game, leave me wanting more, but they're like, no, they just keep giving it to you.
So give me a reason to use my Nintendo Switch console.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It is also on PS5 and Game Pass, but Switch is probably easier.
I do not have PS5, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm the only sucker paying for Game Pass.
I think it's only on Game Pass console, I believe. I don't think there is a computer version of this game, from my understanding.
Right, I remember now. What the hell is their problem?
I don't know.
Vanillaware, I really like your stuff. It would be great if I could like buy it for my friends on Steam or something. Wouldn't it be great if I could gift somebody 13 Sentinels? I would buy more copies of that game to give to other people.
Wow.
Anyway, thank you for indulging me, Seb. I apologize about that.
Yeah, no problem.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your history with The Crow and why you chose it for this episode?
The internet?
You grew up on the internet.
I grew up on the internet knowing a lot of people who were a little bit older than me. Who were into stuff like this, like angsty movies from the 90s. And that influenced a lot of my choices in high school and college of movies to watch, such as finding YouTube uploads of Labyrinth and The Crow.
Was it in like 5 or 15 parts on YouTube? Was it at the point where they had to separate it into parts?
I think by the time I watched The Crow, I actually had a Netflix subscription.
Okay.
Because
YouTube only had like 15-minute videos for a bit there. So it's like you couldn't put a whole movie on there.
Nope. Or even like just 5-minute videos.
Yeah.
There was a time where in order to upload 10 or more minutes, you had to be a partner.
Yeah.
I had heard about the movie. And then I one day came across a music video for a song, which I ended up liking this song. I think somebody linked this on like their DeviantArt currently listening to.
In the signature or on the profile?
Yeah, on their like journal entry or something like that.
You used to have extra ways to personalize your experience online that were not just about buying or selling
back
things.
Before there was pussy in bio.
Yes.
There was song in journal entry.
Yep.
Is pussy and bio still relevant, or is that like 2 months
kind
old?
Of
does
evolving.
That still happen?
It does still happen, but it's got they're new about it.
I'm off Twitter, but
I am not on Twitter.
Okay. Anyway.
Smart to do that.
So I went and listened to this song, and I liked the song. It was called "Why Did I Raise the Fire" by Solar Fake. And it is like
Solar Fake
90s,
is a great name.
Yeah, it's like a 90s, early 2000s, like industrial electronic type of song. And it was set to clips from The Crow. And I said, wow, that movie looks really cool. So I watched the movie and I remember enjoying it. And I got the quote, can't rain all the time from it, which my brain has devolved into can't rain every day, but same thing.
Yeah.
And recently, or maybe a little while, like I think I've thought about this for a couple years because nobody else on the podcast has watched the movie. I don't think Cam has either. I think George has. He had a reaction to it last week. But I decided to pull the trigger on that because it's not a formative movie for me, but I think it's like a valuable piece of kind of like JTHM. It's a valuable piece of 90s angst.
Yep, that's a good touch point.
Yeah.
It definitely like the very dark shadows and harsh muted colors of this are you okay?
A tiny little set that they lit on fire.
Oh no, sorry. It's Staples.
Seth is feeling the staples on the underside of our podcast table.
I just noticed that. I sit here every week and I just noticed that. I feel like it's a good encapsulation of
a sign of 90s. What the times were.
This
what
movie
was cool and interesting back
this
then.
This movie, of course, came out in 1994.
Yeah. Wow.
And
a year before I existed.
It was, they had been sitting on it for a while because of the thing that it is impossible to talk about this movie without.
Let's get it out of the way.
Which is that Bruce Lee's son, Brandon Lee, died tragically filming this film.
It was the previous year when they were filming, so it wasn't that long that they sat on it. But yeah, so Brandon Lee, this was his breakout movie.
Mm-hmm. He mostly just done stunt double shit for his dad.
Yep. But so during a shoot, and he had already shot most of his scenes. But during one scene, a prop gun, one of the other actors fired a prop gun. But it happened to be loaded improperly and it, hit him. They didn't realize what had happened for too long. By the time they realized he had actually been shot, it was too late to save him and he died.
Yeah, that's rough.
And it's incredibly ironic considering the plot of this movie in the comic.
Yeah, it's not great, you know.
He also was about to marry his fiance. In like a month.
And his fiance ultimately was the one who pushed the studio to finish this movie and put it out. She wanted people to see what he had done.
Yeah.
He was proud of the performance he puts out in this movie, which I think is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
He gives a very creepy, emotional performance in this film that I think does hold up.
Yeah. It's definitely a weird, tragic bit of baggage to
and
go along with this.
She's been vocal recently about the Rust shooting.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. That's shit. It's crazy that stuff still happens. It's wow.
She's been pushing for no prop guns because no gun is a prop gun. The way they use them, they are actually pretty much real guns.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't know. Yeah.
So anyway, besides that, this movie is based on a comic by James O'Barr.
Was this an Image comic?
No.
It feels like
it was
independent. Okay. All right. It feels like it could have been an Image comic to me, but.
Image must have just started.
Oh, yeah.
No, maybe
it was a little early.
It was pre-Spawn.
This is pre-Spawn,
wow.
I believe.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so it was actually an 80s comic. And it was, a similar premise. I mean, it was the same premise. The circumstances are a little bit different. So the artist author's fiance was killed by drunk drivers in real life. He made this comic about a guy whose fiance was killed mindlessly by thugs on the street. And so he comes back and kills the thugs.
Vengeance.
Same thing as in the movie, except in the movie, the guys who kill them are working for the landlord, and the fiance is fighting eviction.
Yeah, she has a cause that they didn't agree with.
It
was like an organized hit more than
more of a noir type of thing where there's a conspiracy to uncover. Not really, there's not a tons of twists.
Needs to be a cigar chomping villain in a movie like this.
Yeah. This guy is called he's called Top Dollar.
Yeah.
That's not
it is a fucking Dick Tracy ass villain.
They all have stupid names.
Yeah.
The scene, so the flashback scenes where they're killed are a bit chopped up and weird because that was the scene they were filming when Brandon Lee was shot.
I didn't make that connection until I heard about all that stuff afterwards. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right.
Very often in filming, they'll shoot the beginning last.
It's one of the most jarring scenes in this movie. It looks really bad, I think, the way that they did it. But it makes sense with what they had to do, I guess, right? But
yeah. But anyway, so it's full of gory deaths, kind of. Mm-hmm. Slasherish deaths.
Definitely.
It's full of maybe not so much philosophy, but just sayings like it can't rain all the time.
Yeah.
From the guy who's killing everybody.
Seeing cool stuff, you know, saying cool lines,
lines.
Yeah. Cool in the 90s context.
Is that gasoline I smell? That was really rad. the shopkeeper just runs.
It's got a lot of Ernie Hudson doing stock lines.
Yep.
In a way that he's like, oh, I'm getting too old for this shit. It's like, oh, that's great.
Love yeah, that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Didn't need to write a line of his dialogue at all. He just says, what would a character like yours say in a moment like this? Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I think I would buy a hot dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I think he would say, you can't believe you got it without the onions, for real?
Yep. there's a girl who must be like 13, 14 maybe, and her mom is an erotic dancer, I think. And is also kind of a druggie and just not around. So
yeah, the girl addicted to morphine, which is very weird.
Very classical.
Yeah, classical. That's right. Yeah.
But yeah, the whole movie is just that cynical view. This occurs in Detroit in the 90s.
It took me a minute. Like, I don't think they say Detroit up front. It took me a minute. I think they drop it later in the movie.
I think if we had been, I had to look this up.
Yeah.
If we had been watching this at the time that it came out, we would have immediately clocked it because Devil's Night
was a thing. Yeah, it was
a huge
real
thing, and it was really, really bad, especially at that point in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like the number of fires they said they were having was not an exaggeration.
Yeah.
So they were in Detroit, so it's just kind of that very cynical, like, everything sucks, the city sucks, it's full of a bunch of lowlifes and crime and all that kind of thing.
Kind of, it's some of what, like, RoboCop riffs on, even though that's a sci-fi movie.
Yeah. But, so what did you guys think of the movie?
Do you want to go first? I know you got your criticisms on
it. Well, no, I jumped into some of it already. I think it's like, I did have fun with this. This movie is good. It reminded me too much of Darkman, a movie that I like more. But
I never pegged you for a big Darkman guy.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I watched it when Blank Check did their Raimi stuff, and it ruled. I was really into it. But it is like the similarities are too close for me to not be like, oh, okay.
Did that one come out before or after?
I think it came out earlier.
It was
before.
I want to say Darkman is like 92.
Yeah, it was close.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But that movie is basically, that movie is more of like a Dick Tracy adjacent.
It's the Shadow, basically. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's
what evil lurks in the hearts of men, the Shadow knows.
Right, yeah.
And he's a guy who's all fucked up and burned.
And he's doing vengeance for a bad thing that happened to him. And there's a conspiracy that involves land ownership, I think.
Okay.
The Shadow is 19, not the Shadow, Darkman is 1990.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a Liam Neeson one, and I think he gives a stronger performance, even though I like the Lee performance here. I think he does do a great job. I like the Crow outfit and the makeup and stuff is the kind of like 90s cool guy edgy stuff that I did find endearing and good. Like, I think that costume rules.
So when I come back to this movie, I think about the Heath Ledger.
Oh,
the Joker.
Especially
definitely
with the
so
face makeup. Oh, yeah.
Sure.
And I think about the origins of Jokerfication. Like, I feel like this...
If he danced up the stairs?
Yeah. This is like the predecessor to that. So what was before this in terms of I'm going Joker, you could say like I'm going the Crow mode or something. Like
I'm going Crow mode.
Like,
Crow
you wouldn't say that. That wasn't a thing. But like it... has a vibe to it where I feel like.
But if you say I'm going to become the Crow, it is very evocative. You know, people understand what that might mean. It's like, oh, you're going to go on a rampage of vengeance, the righteous vengeance, and you're probably going to paint your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that this is an aesthetic that I definitely like. It's very 90s. It's something that I have some affection for because it's also The Matrix and it's also Deus Ex, and I like both of those things quite a bit. But the like trench coat and leather shit is like, it's cool. It's like, unfortunately, there's a little bit of Columbine wrapped up in that. But otherwise, it's like.
That was all around the same time, huh?
Well, Columbine was 1999?
I don't know.
No, that's 2000.
I think it might have been earlier.
I think it is. It's 7 or 8.
But I think that like that's all those associations come to mind when I think of like how the Crow looks. And a great point on your end, Seb. The Joker bent from that is interesting and something I hadn't thought about too much. But it definitely fits. But I like the look. I think it rules.
With how old the Joker is in that movie? Do you think he watched The Crow? He probably watched The Crow.
Probably.
It was around. It was around, what, 15 years old when Dark Knight came out?
Probably, yeah.
Just about 14 years old. So I mean, you think maybe maybe that's where he got some ideas. I don't know. Just thinking, just saying.
But I love that he has his like mesh shirt and it like has the slashes and the bullets like from being shot.
I was so surprised that he didn't, like, for a lot of this movie, he wasn't wearing a jacket. I'm like, I feel like he needs a jacket. And then later on, he's like,
the sleeveless shirt, like mesh shirt is the look.
From Tintin.
But I think that the movie takes it like a little bit to get going. I think that the, especially because it like front loads the scenes that I don't think are as good. I mean, maybe because of course the lead actor died, but I think once he gets like, once like he starts, he like blows up the pawn shop and he gets his like first lead on which guy to go hunt down. I think then it like really, really snaps along. It's like,
I don't know. I think one of my favorite scenes is early on when he becomes the crow. And he like puts on the face paint and it zooms out and that needle drop for The Cure.
Oh yeah,
plays. That's my like, I'm a big that's Nine the big one fan, for but you. But The Cure song in this movie, it just slaps so hard.
Yeah, I definitely, maybe it's just like the not being so like, I think that it's maybe a more modern perspective where I think I am a little bit tired of origin stories as an idea. So like the first 30 minutes of this movie, or maybe only like 20 minutes, but it was a foregone conclusion for me. I knew he was going to become the crow.
Yeah, but also like, this is not about the continuing adventures of the crow. It's a very...
He wasn't somebody you just knew unless you were
into it. Yeah, I mean, that's pop, me being exposed to pop culture. Yeah, I knew who the crow was.
Yeah.
But it didn't serve as much of a purpose for me as it might have for the theater-going audience back then. But once he gets going, and like all the kill scenes are great. You mentioned it, Seb, but it's slasher adjacent. It's good. Definitely. It's very Batman. It's very like, I'm gonna, you know, say a funny line or an edgy line, and then I'm gonna catch the knife in midair and throw it back at you and stab it in a funny like shape and paint my crow symbol on the wall.
Yeah,
like,
I'm going to ignite the lighter fluid to get my symbol on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. It. I mean, we've been bringing up Dark Knight, and it's been something that we've mentioned just like unconnected to this, but I kept thinking about it.
I'm a little bat brained this week. I apologize.
I definitely thought
it's relevant to this week.
I think so. I don't know. I don't know how much that this comic was inspired by Batman, but this adaptation feels Batman to me. I don't know.
You think about the way they do the cities here. Burton's Batman is absolutely an influence. What, 89 and 90, or 92, what, for Batman Returns, something like that?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's...
But it's cool. SF is good, and it works.
When you're doing a fake city... It makes sense to kind of go like, okay, who else has done a fake city in the past and how did they do it? In miniatures, especially if you're not going for a super expensive kind of thing.
Didn't look expensive.
No, but it does look
looks
very...
very Gotham-y. Though you said that they name dropped Detroit later.
I think so.
But early on, one of the thugs says Motor City.
Oh, yeah. So. Yep. Yeah, I didn't clock it was Detroit until like they did a news broadcast or something. Mm-hmm. Like it was a visual thing, or they might have mentioned it off like offhand.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting. I the pawn shop owner's really funny. I loved all the
he's from fucking New Jersey.
Yeah, he's such a New Yorker character actor type guy. You could hear him say, "Hey, I'm walking here."
Yeah.
Like you could see it in his face. But that was good. Him like digging through the wedding rings. They kind of underplay this in the movie until like the end, but he has like supernatural powers where he can like read people's thoughts, and I thought
it's
that
like it's like a rogue type of thing. Like if he touches them,
their feelings, he can sense their memories.
He can also like transfer it into people. Which only really comes up at the end. But
I think
like
that was a cool twist on it. I wasn't
Very Ghost Rider.
Yeah,
The kind of the pen and stare of feel the pain you've inflicted on someone else.
I wasn't sure. I didn't know how to feel about that. Like supernatural. I mean, obviously this is a supernatural story anyway.
He's a zombie.
But I didn't really. I wasn't into like the psychic link power stuff until he uses it on the bad guy at the end. I think that was good.
Oh yeah.
But I was,
it makes him fall back and then he falls onto the gargoyle and just it's so good.
Great like corpse death thing. Some good performances in here. I liked Lee. I liked what's his name as the cop. He was good. I love that he wears his cop hat at home, and then and then the crow then, makes yeah, a joke then, about it.
When I saw, like, you're still wearing your hat.
I was tempted to, when you posted, like, oh, he's wearing his cop hat at home, I was tempted to just post the line back at you that he says right afterwards.
It was like 2 seconds later that he makes the joke about it. So I'm like, oh, that's good.
I did like Eric Draven, who is the crow,
Eric.
As a character. So Eric, he still has a little bit of a sense of humor. Or not so much a sense of humor, but he says normal shit sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, you're still wearing your hat, you know, that kind of thing. Just because he still has humanity. He's not only like a ghost of revenge.
Some of that might be the Batman vibes for me too, where he's like, he's all business. He's trying to do something, but like him, like the scene where he talks to the cop and has a funny line, and then like even that one felt very like him and Gordon to me, where he's like, are you going to disappear? He's like, I'll use the door this time. And I'm like, oh, all right, that's funny. Yeah. That's cute.
Yeah.
But I was like, that definitely feels like Dark Knight or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed this. I definitely was thinking about movies I liked more when I watched it for the most part. But I think that this holds up. The action is great. All of the set pieces are good. The goons are... I love, like...
Excellent goons in this film.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
They all have stupid names. They all have gimmicks. Alex brought up Dick Tracy earlier. There's some very Dick Tracy shit going on here.
Yeah. You can see the action figure of the fucking guy in his car.
And they're absolute idiots, too.
Oh, yeah. They're boneheads.
Yeah. So you got Tintin, T-Bone. I think one of them is called T-Bone.
Tintin, T-Bone, what? Oh, God. It starts with an S. It's like Shrug or something.
No. It's, fuck. It's like a like... It's not slob, but it's like something like that where it's not, where it's insulting.
It wasn't one of the ones I wrote down.
But so. Those guys all being killed in their like their specific way is great. The like main bad guy with his like long hair and his ninja sword, and his like weird sex thing. It all worked. I was definitely into it. And of course, like Candyman just being the heavy in the back is like great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being a guy who can sit up on a balcony somewhere and just fire on the hero.
He had like the coolest gun ever, and they don't really use it that much, but it's...
Yeah, he doesn't show up too much.
Also got they show you that the villain is evil, not just by having him do a bunch of cocaine, but also showing that he's an incestuous relationship with his witch half-sister.
Yeah, and they fuck some lady to death.
Yeah.
Did it say they were half-sister?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
there's a line totally where they talk about
that. Yeah. There's some weird incest shit going on.
Because it's he doesn't have an accent, but she does.
Yeah.
But I guess that's where the happens.
Also, she's doing like magic. She's setting an eye on fire.
Yeah,
she's
like a like witch powers.
That's how she figures out. Like, she's like, oh, I know his weakness because I've communed with the spirits. It's like, you just set a bunch of body parts on
fire.
What
if we shoot the bird? Yeah. It's like, that's it. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
You have to kill the bird.
You have to kill the phylactery first.
Yeah. Meanwhile, her half brother, I guess, is sniffing like an entire dinner plate of cocaine
and
not dying.
He's got a mountain.
Yeah, no, he says, I wish I was hungry again. And I'm like, it's probably because you're doing so much fucking cocaine.
Yeah, that ruled. But yeah, this movie definitely like very of the time, very, very 90s in ways that I both like and don't like. but I definitely saw the appeal. I was excited to watch this because this was a blind spot for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I am glad to now know what the Crow is all about.
Yeah. What's your favorite death?
The final bad guy is so fucking good.
The fucking blood coming out of the gargoyle's mouth is so good. Yeah. Oh my God.
You
what
can't
an
beat
image.
That, I think.
Yeah.
The,
what
the
an
guy,
image. I think the car.
Yeah. The guy he
cool
duct taped
too.
To the car and then exploded was good. Great. Yeah, it's all good.
Hmm. I really like the guy who gets put in the wheelie chair and kicked out the window.
Yeah.
Mm. Because they have a reaction shot of the crow looking out, like, you know, where you don't see what happens to this guy, even though there's tons of gore in this movie. And you hear, like, a very cartoon splat noise.
Yeah.
And there's something very effective about that.
Yeah.
It's like, other people have been kicked out of windows in this movie and you see what happens to them. Other people have fallen or they get blown up and shot.
Like,
and you see
four
what happens
or five different jumps
and
out
this
of
the
window.
This is the one guy where you see him fall, but you don't see him hit the ground, and you hear this like noise, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, The crow is checking to make sure he's dead. All right, the crow's walking away from the window, and we're good.
I do. You just jogged something loose for me, but I do love that he does just jump off of roofs and out of windows. He does it like two or three times because it's like, cool. Well, he can't.
Runs across rooftops.
The fact that he can't die is so funny. Like, of course, like, oh, the fastest way down is to jump, but he doesn't have like a Batman suit where he glides down safely. He doesn't just
have ghost, he doesn't have ghost powers in that way.
Well, he just knows he's not going to die if he jumps off the roof. So it's like, okay.
So he'll still land ungracefully in a pile of garbage. It was
so funny. Yeah. It's great. Mm. But
all right. So I watched this earlier in the week. I got a couple of notes on this. I was like, you know, watching the horrible destruction in the first, and I'm like, I didn't realize they were going to reveal the motivation for this later on about like why these guys are here. And I'm like, oh, just what, these guys are just a violence gang. Like they don't sell drugs.
Yeah.
They don't like enforce, they don't like stick people up for money. They're just like, they're just having a good time.
But that's what happened in the comic. And I think that's why they changed
those,
it.
Those goons, like before you really figure out what their deal is.
Yeah.
It was very, very Death Wish to me. Mm-hmm. A lot of the goons in those movies are just like weird party guys that like kill and rape for fun.
Choppo Trap House, a podcast I really like. Whenever conservatives write articles about vaguely defined like crime, they'll joke that they're afraid of violence gangs. Like they don't have any ideas of, they don't have goals, or they're not people of what to do. They just exist to like be, you know,
to be violent.
The assault on precinct 13 guys that are essentially just zombies,
those
but
guys
they're
are like
people.
Satanists. They're interested. They're like actually worshiping the cult of Baal. Like they've got some interesting stuff going on there. But in this one, only later on do we actually kind of get to see what's going on for them. So at first I'm like, oh, they're just a violence gang. My first note is, I was very hurt by the wanton destruction of pinball machines. You see them, like how it's like, oh, you know, they're fucked up because they enter like, you know, just an abandoned establishment. They just smash all the pinball machines with hammers and torch everything. after we've already seen them kill our main character. Mm-hmm. Or at least seen the aftermath of it. We don't really get to see what happens until later on.
Yeah.
Afterwards I wrote, every mischief gang needs a throwing knife expert and a cigarette eater. Because they're showing off like the way these guys are, like what their personalities are.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the bullet swallowing. Yeah. That shit is crazy, dude. I loved that.
Really good.
It was awesome.
Excellent way to have us remember these scumbags.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
Because so much of the rest of the movie is based around hunting them down. So it's like, really burn these guys into your brain. Like, why would you want to see them die in a very elaborate way? This movie is something I wrote it down as a note at the beginning, but it comes up all the way through. This movie is thoroughly disconnected from reality. But I don't really need my movies to be real. I'm watching a film. I love artifice. I love fakery.
Oh, man.
I think it's great when somebody is willing to be like, okay, here's this. Here's like a toy. Here's a toy building. This is where it's taking place. I'm like, great, I'm in.
I'm going to zoom in on this 1-inch tall building.
Yeah, this 1-inch tall building. Where... The crow is flying over there. I'm like, wonderful. I am so in. And the other thing I wrote down right next to that I think was very much an intentional directorial choice. This movie looks like a music video. It looks like a music video. Mm-hmm. It's shot like a music video. A lot of the cuts look like a music video.
A lot of the needle drops.
Yes, well, okay. Music video. That's a, like
the music video editing was one of the things that I was not super into.
You're not super into the flashing between cuts.
All that stuff is so disorienting.
You don't like Nine Inch Nails was like the thing.
Yeah,
you don't like the slow twisting in on somebody.
No,
with music over it. But no, I found that to be very endearing. I think that this kind of like, you know, we've said that it's very 90s, and it is, but I think that this kind of, like, industrial, like, twisting, flashing, like, sharp-cutting style is, it's a lost art. Maybe for a reason, but, like, I find that to be so refreshing.
You put it
next to
the Ark of the Covenant in the warehouse.
Exactly. I think it's become...
we don't need it anymore.
We don't really have music videos anymore. We do. We do have them, but we don't
have
them.
They hired everyone
way.
Who made the good ones, and now they make movies.
Yeah, not I think in this particular instance, in a movie like this, this is to Gen X as, like, The cringe we watched in the 2000s is to us.
I don't think, I feel like you're being not being charitable enough.
No. What I'm saying is we don't get stuff like this anymore because Gen X thinks it's cringe. I liked that when I was 15.
All right, I see that.
Whereas now you see Zoomers coming in and pulling our cringe from when we were 15.
Importing
saying,
cringe?
Really
they're
cool.
Importing cringe because...
they're copy pasting our cringe.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think that the pool isn't as wide for their stuff for them to like.
They don't have enough cringe.
They don't have enough. They don't have enough to pull from. I mean, we've talked about the problem.
We weren't cringe
with live action movies. No. That's not what I mean.
I was cringe.
Don't you worry about that.
Yeah.
There are probably plenty of audio recordings of me on ancient computers that I will not divulge.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've done the podcast for 6 years. I think now you could go back to one of those and you could see yourself be cringe in real time.
I think I would probably want to slap myself for some of the stuff I said 5 years ago. Like, shut the fuck up.
Oh, me too.
I do that. I would want to slap myself for things I said last week.
Also, me too.
You got some new opinions on A New Hope?
It's good.
But the music video feeling is something that goes all the way through this, for sure. It never leaves, and I don't know that I would want it to. It's so fitting. All these fights happening happening in the rain, but it's raining all the time, even though it can't rain all the time.
Yeah, it stops raining at the end of the movie.
Yep.
Yeah. I thought it was funny when I first saw the crow claw his way out of his grave. I'm like, okay, so he's more like a zombie than a ghost. But they keep doing ghost musical stings and like having him disappear and stuff. But then, so I'm like, okay, when Tintin is throwing the knives at him, I'm like, one of them is going to hit and it's going to go right through him. It's going to phase right through him because he's a ghost. But
nope. No,
he's very real. He's very corporeal. He is in his body.
Well,
so
he came out of his grave.
Yes, but
physically.
Even if you do that, right, you could still be doing it for a visual, for an image.
Okay.
It could still be the spirit, you know, but it is very much the body. And I think that it is interesting to have your undead character be more of a zombie than a ghost. And to have this, like, have him be, you know, capable of making decisions and kind of working things out. He's not a mindless spirit of vengeance. He is... still very much himself.
Yeah. And he cares for Sarah, the girl, a lot. Like, he wants to protect her. Like, he nearly goes back to the grave until he hears Sarah screaming because the baddies who are still left, because they weren't the ones who killed his fiance, are kidnapping her in order to draw him out. But yeah, like, everybody's very protective of her, but because she was friends, like, his fiance, kind of took care of her because her mom was very absentee.
I feel like it would have been cleaner if she was just his kid. But I know that, I don't know, yeah.
I think
having the relationship between Sarah and her mom is actually kind of nice, but they don't really have time for it.
It's not really the focus of this movie, but
I think she's a symbol of, she is innocence within this world.
The goodness and this bad,
She can't be his kid. Because the whole point is the world is rotten and has left a child to the streets, you know?
Okay, so after that, I wrote circus trick ass vengeance when he starts juggling the knives to throw at Tintin. It's very much like he's giving a little performance for the last. And I'm like, okay, this guy's in clown makeup and he's doing juggling and he's about to do knife throwing tricks. Like, this is a fucking circus.
I do like that he was like, these are my knives. They never miss. Uh-huh. And then he throws three of them and two miss, and then he catches the third one. It was like, that rules.
It struck me immediately when you see him die the first time. I'm like, oh, he doesn't get like shot or stabbed or whatever, or burned alive or something like that. He gets killed with a throwing knife. That's like pathologic one.
Well, then they do shoot him in the back a bunch, you kind of lose it in that really choppy flashback sequence.
Yeah.
But
and then he falls through the window.
Then he falls.
Yeah. So, we get a cut to this club, right? That we're going to spend a lot of time at throughout the movie, the pit. And, I immediately was struck by the hanging cages that they've got in there. And I think
it's such a visual.
In 1990, there must be one club in LA that has hanging cages, because in every movie, TV show, comic books, everything, it's like, okay, we got hanging cages in our nightclub, and sometimes there are girls dancing in them. And this one, they got lights, light fixtures inside them, which makes way more sense to me, especially for an industrial style place.
Yeah, like how
this.
Do they get up there?
How do the dancing girls get up there?
Yeah.
You use a fucking ladder.
Yeah, but then you gotta like go around. What if you have to pee and you have to yell at someone to go get you the ladder?
You have scheduled breaks.
Okay.
I don't know. There's probably...
It's
like,
impractical.
Of course it's impractical. Hanging cages are not done for practicality. They're done for a look, for an image. So much of the stuff in this movie
they're
is done for a look, for an image.
They're trying to keep somebody away.
I'm not even going to look into this. We're going to move on.
If you're a prisoner, being in a hanging cage, that makes sense.
So the light fixture in this cage is
not a
prisoner.
You need the big cage key to unlock it, and then you can learn sorceries.
Oh, of course. Big Hat Logan. Love that guy.
Yeah.
Alex brought it up earlier, the scene where this guy goes to the pawn shop, the crow goes to the pawn shop.
Mm-hmm.
He's mixing his Corvids. It's like mixing metaphors. It's like,
oh, yeah.
He's doing Poe's the Raven. He's like, you heard a rapping at your door. And I think it does work.
It does work. But then if you think it through for a second, you're like, wait a minute.
I mean, you're a crow.
It's not like they don't know what they're doing. They're doing it on purpose.
No, yeah.
It's like,
it works.
It fits thematically, but it's like,
Literally.
I really loved him reaching into the fistful of wedding rings and being like, these are all the people whose lives you helped destroy. That was like a really good image. And then for him to ignite the pawn shop by shooting the wedding rings out of a shotgun. Yeah. What an image.
Yeah. After he has poured gasoline everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think that might be my favorite, one of my favorite images of the movie is of firing the wedding rings out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also when we have the crow finally meet with Ernie Hudson, our cop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
what is it, Officer Albrecht?
Yep. Who has been all through this movie. Who's been there since the beginning.
He's the Commissioner Gordon.
Yep. And he's your guy. He's your guy to instruct you on the finer points of hot dog eating. Put the mustard on the bottom and the onions on the top. That is good advice.
When he led off with the cut to the first shot of that scene is like a huge amount of ketchup on that hot dog.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh no, he's ruining it.
He's ruining it.
Yep. And he calls the guy out for it. How dare you run this hot dog stand and make a hot dog like that?
Yeah. It is like, honestly, we just did Costco. It is like a Kirkland signature bun. It is so much bun on that hot dog.
Oh, I want a hot dog right now.
I really wanted them after watching this.
We should keep
the onions make me fart. I can't do it.
We should keep a pack of frozen hot dogs in your freezer or something.
Okay, I can make that happen.
I feel like that might be a good thing to just be like, when we get an hour into the show, we realize, oh shit, I'm really hungry. It's like
Patreon.com/pleasedoncast. Donate to our hot dog fund.
I think I can generously afford some
hot shot hot over here. Can afford a frozen hot dog.
I can afford some frozen processed meats.
Not me.
Not ketchup.
I need your donations, listeners. Pledge
don't
to
have
us.
Any mustard.
We'll get some raw onions too. That's easy. relish, maybe.
Please don't cast.
Okay. So I love. I mean, I instantly recognized Ernie Hudson. Love to see him. Always happy to see him in anything. He's got a great voice. He's got a great easy character to him. Like a very very easygoing. And like he's doing regular cop shit of like, oh yeah, I need you to pull this file and oh, I owe you one and
yeah, he's got
oh
a whole...
you're off the case and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but it's
there's
very
a dynamic with
that's
him
why they
and
took
the
your
detective.
Shield.
Yeah.
He's so relaxed about all this stuff that you almost get the feeling he's like, oh yeah, I'm fine. I'm not the main character of this movie.
Yeah.
Who cares?
He's chilling.
Yeah. He's chilling.
Even when he's like already has been like
actively dying.
Yeah, he's still chill.
Yeah, he's like, I've been meaning to come to church anyway, because they're like in a church and he's like shot.
It's like he knows he's not going to die in the movie.
Like
the character,
the character knows
he's not going to die,
yeah.
So he's fine.
Mm-hmm. It's very good use of Ernie Hudson. Basically,
yeah,
is what
endearing, very good. I keep bringing it up, but he was felt very Commissioner Gordon to me. But.
And we brought up earlier, while I'm thinking about actors that are used well in this film, fucking Tony Todd as your heavy, as like your guy who doesn't talk all that much
and
with
a
cool
sniper.
Your serious guy to push people around, to the guy who actually shoots the bird.
And he's got like an awesome suit on too.
Oh, he is so sharp.
Yeah.
I was so jealous of him.
And because of the way he's dressed and because his most expressive feature is his eyes, I didn't figure out it was Tony Todd until he opened his mouth and the fucking Candyman voice comes out, that like perfect deep voice that Tony Todd is so good with. And I'm like, oh my God, like it's him. Like, oh, I couldn't believe it. Yeah. And we, of course, talked about how much we love Tony Todd in our Candyman episode.
Check out our Candyman episode.
And when Cam eventually makes us do Final Destination, we'll be talking about it again, I'm sure. Because he's not on this show to receive that idea, but I know that it's something he wants to make.
That idea will make its way to him.
Yeah. But those two are excellent in this movie, Ernie Hudson, Tony Todd. And of course, Brandon Lee, which we already brought up. This movie is very melodramatic in a way that I find very endearing. I like it a lot. I don't know if you guys noticed this. There are a lot of people in this movie who have like a ton of scarring on them. I think that's like an intentional makeup choice. I like in order to like make these guys look rough and tumble. But it was very noticeable, and I think a good choice for sure.
Yeah, the other cop, like the commissioner, the detective guy. Yeah.
His to me looked more like acne scar.
He had such a weird, distinctive mug. I was like so into his look.
Yeah, I don't know that one was makeup.
Well, yeah, I don't know. That was just something that came to mind because he was one of the most distinctive looking dudes in this movie to me. In a movie filled with weird looking guys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that he and our other cop didn't actually. Like, they have a history, but they didn't go into, like, oh, I'm going to get my detective shield back.
Yeah, because that's not the important part of this story, which I like. I like that they're able to leave that alone, because what we're actually about is the vengeance stuff going on between a guy called Top Dollar and a guy called the Crow.
Yep.
And,
we love Top Dollar.
Yes, we do. When the Crow gets to the big, like, villain sit-down at the end, and he, like, sits cross-legged on the table. I'm like, there's always a guy who's doing some shit like that, you know?
That
like,
was, I mean, speaking of Joker, that was Joker as hell to me.
I think of the stupid drill tweet, like, everyone groans at my shit. Like, it's like, all right, you get up on the table and
he's
sit on it.
He's being cute with it. Yeah, and it's like, it's great. It works. It's good.
You're just here to annoy everyone, which he's doing on purpose.
Yeah.
To bring it back to Dark Knight again, that feels like him crashing, like, the mob meeting or whatever. When they're in like the kitchen or whatever, but if he sat cross-legged on that table, that would be it.
I've been feeling a rewatch of the 2022 Batman lately. I've been thinking about it a little bit more.
Wow,
I kind of want to reappraise that. I don't think I thought it was bad at the time.
Arbats.
But
it was too long, unfortunately. I think
it's not really any longer than Dark Knight.
Yeah, I know. I just think the last act with like it felt so
the flooding stuff. I think was a little much. I will agree with you there. But I think that in general it's a good movie. Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about The Crow.
Good use of the
penguin.
But I think
that The Crow actually does have influences stretching into the Batman.
Oh, absolutely.
The 2022 The
this,
Batman.
This movie, I do feel bad for not like talking about this more on its own terms, but this movie is such an amalgamation of influences and ideas that I've seen
it
in so many other things.
It cannot exist without the context around it, both in the past and the future.
Yeah,
you see a whole lot of where the tendrils come out.
It's a big catamaran of ideas to me.
That's a good way of putting it.
And it's interesting, and I like it. But
it's remained in the cultural awareness. This had several sequels. None of them did very well.
Return
I have
of
not
Crow.
Watched
it
any of them.
It had a TV series, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a new one. There's a reboot or a remake coming out in a couple months.
Summer,
like
right?
June or something like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, we have to watch it.
It looks so bad. I can't
wait. I don't think they can recapture this type of feeling. It's like trying to make Space Jam now, which they tried.
A new legacy.
That's not the example I would have used.
No, but but I'm saying like you can't capture the vibe of that decade again.
What's old is new again.
Yeah, LeBron isn't the new Jordan. Sorry.
He's tried. One of the things that LeBron does that Jordan didn't do is make his career last way, way longer. which, you know, there's quitting while you're ahead, and then there's like, no, I want to be ahead for so long that when I quit, everyone will be like, finally, God.
So far ahead, people want you to quit.
That's one way of thinking about it. So in doing another cultural reference here, when they do show the giant long boardroom table of the drug lord meeting thing that we got going on.
Yeah,
drug
where
lord,
they're loading their guns and stacking their money.
Real estate scandal meeting for Devil's Night. and I just think of the fucking the Simpsons bit making fun of scenes like this where it's gentlemen to evil and they they all toast to
they're
it.
They're literally
like,
talking about burning the city for no reason. Like everyone's like, why would we do it besides greed? And Top Dollar is like, because it's fun.
Chaos.
You know, chaos.
His big speech is stupid. It's like, oh, man.
Like, I just want to burn shit.
Yeah.
We already talked about Top Dollar's death. We already talked about Ernie Hudson getting shot. We already talked about that final fight scene in the rain. Really great. Psychically inflicting the pain on your enemy.
Having a sword fight.
Wonderful stuff. That sword fight, great. The sword fight with the church. When you open up a big safe and there's a ton of swords there, that big sword, right? Do you guys recognize that big sword?
No.
It is the six-fingered sword from Princess Bride.
Ah.
So it is literally the exact same prop. It is not a new prop made to look like it. It's not coincidental.
That's funny.
That is cool.
The prop from that movie.
Huh.
Then, of course, when he needs a sword at the end and he picks up the weather vane, wonderful image. So good. This movie does exactly what it needs to. I had a great time, and this was a missing cultural reference for me.
Yeah, it's definitely filled in some puzzle pieces.
In Venture Brothers, when Dermot shows up Hank calls him Kiss, and Dermot's like, "I'm the Crow. Haven't you seen the Crow?" And it's like, it's like, all right, now we. It's like that was a missing piece for me. I knew what the Crow was, but I'd never seen it. You know,
I don't think this got on mic, but I talked about this when Seb put this episode forward, or was thinking about it. But the Impractical Jokers have one of their friends dress up as the Fat Crow as a character, which is so funny because it's just this like portly balding man that they're friends with. Mm-hmm. But like as a punchline in like two or three different episodes, they put him in the full Crow outfit. But anyway, yeah, it's good to have a touch point for that. But.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm here for, is to bring in cultural touch points from the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah, Seb's our reference point for edgy and...
For edgy 90s and being a 10-year-old in the year 2003.
We need it.
Yeah.
Well, we're going in a little bit of a different direction next week.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we will be talking about the anime film Black Fox, which is a listener suggestion. Thank you, Trey. And that's kind of totally going to a different era, totally going to a different feeling. But I am looking forward to doing more. We're going to branch out this year a lot more, I think. And I think we've already kind of been moving in that direction. But I'm excited to see what we're going to get into.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it. So if you have your own idea that you would like to send into us, please send it to pleasedontcast@gmail.com. And that is pleasedontcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Is that gasoline I smell?
In the city that I hear.
We walk the narrow path beneath the smoking skies.